is on fire.
Yes, we are. We're fired up, and rightfully so, here with our guest, Ted Pike, and we've diverted over to the question about homeland security and domestic terrorism, and I see a timeline here. I see an evolutionary line from 9/11 right up to the present, where if anybody is demonizing the gun owners and the demonizing those that believe in the Second, the First Amendment, and do believe in their God-given liberty, why, it's the government itself. It's the federal government, egged on and controlled by the ADL types, the Southern Poverty Law Center, and other such Jewish extremist groups, wouldn't you say, Ted?
Absolutely. Yeah.
All right, let's take another call now so we can move ahead. Jim in New York has something to say for us. Hello, Jim.
Yeah, hello there. Actually, I'll be honest with you. I'm not calling in because of the call from Rita, although I will promise you that I won't yell. Reverend
you.
Pike, how are you, sir?
Yeah, pretty good. How you doing, Mr. X or whatever you are?
just Jim is good. You know, this whole, every time this topic is brought up and you see what's going, you know, as we see what's going on, it just disgusts me more and more thoroughly. The fact that with all of the problems that we can't get solved, I mean, just on the surface, Reverend, with all the problems that we have and all of the problems going on in this country and in the world, that we're concerned with protecting 2% of the population at the exclusion of everybody else.
Yes. Yeah, pretty amazing. Actually, it's 1.5%.
You know, they tried that here in New York. While this state was burning to the ground, Governor Patterson said, I know what we'll do. We'll see if we can ram through a gay marriage bill.
Yes.
So, I mean, the people in New York spoke up. That was good, and they stopped mm-hmm. that. But, you know, I just don't know what to say anymore about this. It's sickening. And you people like Kevin Jennings in control. People don't do something, Reverend. We are on the precipice.
Yes.
Well, I mean, that's the thing is right now we still do have the opportunity and the luxury of speaking out, writing and blasting them and, working through the system. Now, the time will come, undoubtedly, when they will make it impossible for people to live and to live freely. And that's what happened in the 1700s, in the 1760s and 70s, especially when the colonists said, hey, we're willing to negotiate, you know, and we'll even talk to the king, we'll deal with him, and we'll compromise if we have to. But no, there was no room for compromise in the end. And then we heard the shot that was heard around the world, you know, from Lexington and Concord. So this is where we are now. We're approaching that state, I believe.
Well, the fact is, though, that ADL is really running out of options as far as demonizing its enemies, because mm-hmm. you see, it has used this potential for vilifying anybody as quote unquote anti-Semitic to
yeah.
very, very effective use over the past century, really, and.
Yeah.
And yet more and more, we keep a pretty close watch on the Internet, and more the Jewish websites are saying that Foxman is exhausting this. He's cried wolf, wolf too much. People are laughing at him. In fact, there has been even some talk, I understand, about getting a new ADL director now. The Jews are actually considering Foxman almost more of a liability.
Yeah, it's about time, huh?
Yeah.
Right. Okay, we got the break. Thank you for your call there, Jim. We got to move along. Doris and Jim from Missouri will be up next with Ted Pike, my guest, Radio Avenger Rick Adams, right here on Republic Broadcasting Network. All right, here we are back again with Ted, and we're going to go right back to our telephone. We have Doris in Kansas up now. Hello, Doris.
Hello.
Yeah.
I listen to Rita, and you know, there's a lot of times when I feel exactly like her. Yeah, I feel like if the American people had stood up in 1907 1913, when they voted in that Federal Reserve, they should have come up against those few senators and representatives that voted that in and demanded that they redo that thing. Also, when they took their gold, they should have stood up and had a revolution. When Nixon took the silver away from us, we should have stood up and had a revolution. I realize that Reverend Ted Pike is trying to do everything the right way, and many times I agree, but you know, it just keeps marching on. He's mm-hmm. been working at this since the 40s, the 30s, the 50s, the 60s, and what have we got? It's worse. I think someday, if we don't stand up and do something, God himself is going to come and say, you know, you've let this go too far. This country is perverted.
Mm-hmm.
If we don't do something, God himself is going to take vengeance upon us for allowing it.
Maybe he's doing it now with, you know, by visiting upon us all of this apostasy and judgment, and this is part of it, you know, as a not that you and I are responsible for it, but the state of America, the churches, and the you know, the declension,
you know,
the apostasy.
The militia should have been there when Randy Weaver was under attack.
But they weren't.
They should have stopped
it. They're on the other side. They're worshiping at the foot of the beast.
The militia should have been there at Waco and stopped that.
Mm-hmm.
I definitely have said this all along.
So you have like a you're Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde type of attitude, and
well,
I think we all fall into that same picture, Rita. Doris. I think we're all probably perplexed. You know, we feel outrage when the government takes our tax dollars and kills children with them in Afghanistan and bombs families allegedly by accident and expands the wars of so-called terror into Afghanistan and the Pashtun and so forth. But, you know, on the other hand, we say, what will happen if the government now with the media has the excuse to start to implement their Rex 84, all of their other programs, when most people aren't even properly armed and able to defend themselves and wouldn't even know where to begin, I think. Most of us, most Americans, wouldn't know.
I'm part of that group, you know. My husband is in a wheelchair.
Yeah.
I am disabled myself, but mm-hmm. I keep working at it every day, and I make all my calls. But beside that, what is going to happen to us if we don't do something? You know, this is horrible, but when you stop and think that they've allowed Monsanto to put all this stuff in our food and are making all these plans that we can't that we can't trade good food and all that stuff, mm-hmm. they're killing us anyway. We just as well make a stand.
If I may say so, Doris, the question is, when is the time? When will be that time?
Right time when we've killed another 4 million people in Iraq or Afghanistan or such places, or
babies
if we,
here in America?
If we have still doing these wars until the time comes when somebody starts lopping bombs over here?
Well, all right, let's.
I mean, that's going to kill millions of people. I mean, we're going to have to make a stand.
Doris, let Ted respond again. Ted, I think the question is here is how much is enough and when will enough be enough?
I certainly appreciate Rita's concern, but we have to kind of define what it means to stand up.
Mm-hmm.
The reason the Federal Reserve Act passed in 1913 was that there were no communications coming in from the American people to Congress. They pushed this through covertly, and the American people didn't understand international banking or any of these terms, and they just kind of trusted the government. Now, there was no need in 1913 for millions of people to take to the streets in a bloody revolution if they had only bombarded Congress with protestations and intelligent letters arguing against this. Now, back in 2002, back when nobody cared about hate crimes laws, nobody knew what was going on in Canada, I was the only one in the country who was attempting to educate about the dangers of the federal hate crimes bill. In fact, I borrowed $4,000 from a friend of mine in order to print out a powerful brochure, hate laws brochure, educating legislators about this problem. We sent it to every state representative and senator on the state level in America. We also sent it to every member of Congress, plus about 10 of their legislative aides. We saturated Congress with a very articulate and powerful document. And a lot of them obviously got thrown into dumpsters and so on. But I was told by Jim Tucker of American Free Press that after that mailing, that the press club in Washington, D.C. was abuzz with statements by senators that they were getting such intelligent letters and communications against the hate bill out of nowhere. They didn't know where all these educated arguments were coming from. As a direct result of that, within a few weeks, the hate bill came before the Senate, and Tom Daschle was the Senate majority leader there, and they were going to just pass the hate bill. They were going to pass the hate bill in 2002. Without any opposition, expecting it would be a cakewalk. But as a result of what I did, Senator Kyle and several others stood up on the floor of the Senate and they said, hey, wait a minute now. We're not going to just rubber stamp this. We're not going to push it through because we have these objections and we want to talk about the hate bill. Well, Daschle was terrified. He would not allow that. He knew how fragile the hate bill was, how phony it was. The last thing he and the ADL wanted was get a discussion on the floor of the Senate about the hate bill. As a result, he tabled the hate bill right there. He put an immediate end to the hate bill, and the hate bill ended for that session of Congress. Now, that shows you how what only one person who is very burdened and concerned about this can do for the country. Now, let me just give you another example of how our efforts at the National Prayer Network have made a difference. This spring, we played a pivotal role again and again and again in alerting the nation and holding back the hate bill. Finally, everybody was really, really sick and tired of the issue by July when it finally came almost to a vote in the Senate. There were no calls coming in, and I was absolutely frustrated. Finally, 2 days before it was scheduled to be voted in the Senate, the homosexual calls were actually outnumbering Christian calls coming into the Senate. I was furious. I sent out an email widely throughout America shaming Christian conservatives for letting the homosexuals outdo them in lobbying efforts for the hate bill. I shamed the religious right so much that there was suddenly a flood of calls. In other words, people stood up and they called in. There were so many calls coming in, they outnumbered the hearings. What was the name? Running for the Supreme Court. I forget her name right now. They outnumbered the health care issue and also the Supreme Court nomination hearings at that time. There was a flood of calls. The Democrats were so terrified that these people were all going to vote them out at midterms, that as a result of that, on the floor of the Senate, the decision was made to throw a stop to the religious right and adopt the Brownback Amendment. Now, the Brownback Amendment was rejected in the House several months earlier, but out of fear of the American people and the voters, even the Democrats put in the Brownback Amendment, which stated absolutely clearly that no clergyman, no talk show host, no publisher could ever be indicted under the federal hate crimes law for speech that might stimulate some distant person in the airwaves or in publishing towards some violent action or intimidation of federally protected groups. As a result of what happened at the very last minute by the people standing up through massive protest, even the Democrats wilted and allowed precious precious stipulations to be put in the hate bill, which were retained throughout the summer, were signed into law, and now are protecting us even within the hate bill. Now, we are long, long way from shedding blood in the public streets as a way of saving America. We need to stand up in the right way, in the civilized way that was enshrined in the Constitution and the legislative process of our republic. We are far from having exhausted that. The main problem today, I find, in trying to whip up this kind of real standing up for freedom is there's a lot of big talk out there about going out and having a bloody revolution and throwing the bums out and all that kind of thing. I don't think 99% of those people who are talking like that would stand and fight when the machine guns and the cannons were firing in their direction. I think,
you know, I've wondered that myself sometimes. You know, talk is cheap. And when it comes to push to shove, you see what happens. You know, you probably wouldn't get five people out there out of 2,000 who talk that way. But then again, it's open to question. But anyway, okay, thank you for your call, Doris. We have to move along, but Ted, can you stay some more?
I sure can.
All right, because we do have more calls for Ted Pike. Truthtellers.org, Rick Adams. We will be right back with more of Uncensored Talk. We're back now with Ted Pike and our calls here. And just a program note, tomorrow night we have our guest scheduled, Greg Felton, investigative journalist who specializes in the Middle East, Canadian politics, and the media and languages. He holds a master's degree in political science at the University of British Columbia, speaks French, Russian, and Mandarin, and he writes a political column for the monthly Arabic English Canadian Arab News. So anyway, he'll be on tomorrow night. Are you familiar with him, Ted?
No, I'm not.
Okay, well, he'll be our guest, hopefully, in the first hour or so tomorrow night. But we'll have a lot to talk about again. Okay, let's see if we can continue now with our callers here. And we have Jim in Missouri. Hello, Jim.
Rick and Ted, thanks for having me on.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Hey, I've got several things that I'd just like to comment about.
Sure.
Number one, tonight was the first time that I'd ever heard somebody so angry on a radio show. I haven't seen that, and I'm very involved within the movement. I am not worried about the Tea Parties at this time, but I think it needs to be said that the Tea Parties were created by the Ron Paul Revolution. We were doing Tea Parties in 2007, and it is quite clear what's going on right now is there is a movement from the right in the Republican movement to co-opt those Tea Parties. And let me tell you why. I mean, they're talking about it being a Republican movement. It was never a Republican movement. That was part of the Ron Paul Revolution, and we had Democrats, Republicans, conservatives, constitutionalist parties, Libertarian Party people. We had them from all walks. And I don't think that the Republican Party is getting the word. The people are fed up, and neither party is serving them. And I think that what we're seeing with the two Tea Parties being taken over is that what I'm seeing the death of the Republican Party if they don't open their arms to these other people. And I'll tell you, I come from one of the most conservative hotbeds in the country. And for the first time in my life, I learned the political process because I wasn't taught it in school. And I sided with the Republican side because Ron Paul was a Republican. And what I experienced was I experienced a bunch of people that could not think for themselves. They had a party line. That was it. They didn't understand the Constitution. They didn't understand our history. And I was really concerned about that. And I understand going with the legislative efforts. I've been on that side. I was a state coordinator for We the People and Restore the Republic. We attempted that side, but the problem with it is that we have so-called representatives and senators, both at the state and federal level, that all they think that they're there to do is pass legislation. Well, we're all working. We're trying to raise families. We don't have time to look at 100 bills every month and read every word of it and then call Washington.
Well, they don't either.
It's out of control. It is out of control, and they are not listening to us. I mean, there's groups out there like Downsize DC and other groups, and they're sending hundreds of thousands of faxes and emails and phone calls with no response. They just get up there on the hill, and they just act like they're going to do what they're going to do. And I think that we're getting close. Rick made a comment earlier that he thought we were getting close to something's got to give. But I served along with, we covered all 50 states, and we served the majority, if not all, of the representatives and senators, federal, redress of grievances. No response. Here in the state of Missouri, there was a response that came out of Ike Skelton, and it was a threat to one of the people in his area, in his district, whatever, and it was a threat to him saying, I think you're threatening me, and I'm going to turn this over to the FBI. That's the treatment the people are getting. And legislation, you can do legislation all day long. Why is this latest, greatest thing? Why is this important? We're losing our country. That piece of legislation doesn't mean anything to me because that's just one more notch in the panel.
Jim, did you have more to say, or did you want to conclude on that note?
I wish you luck, Ted. I think you're in the right direction, but I think the people are getting really fed up, but I don't think people up top understand that.
All right. We'll be right back. Thank you.
Thanks,
for the
Jim.
Call. Okay, we're back now, and Jim has made his comments and statements, and I know, Ted, that you probably have already addressed what Jim has said, but you might want to just, if you had any reply to his synopsis, then certainly you're welcome to give a final word, you know? I know what my thoughts are, but go ahead.
Yes, thanks so much, Rick. Rick, I think at top of the agenda is to slow down the glut of legislation, especially perverse legislation that is coming through Congress. I understand that there are literally several thousand bills a year, or at least a session of Congress, that come through, and these members of the House and Senate are extremely overworked and distracted taking care of that kind of a glut. But on the other hand, there is no other organization that pumps out perverse, freedom-destroying legislation like the Anti-Defamation League. And top of the agenda, in my opinion, is everyone, instead of just bellyaching against the government or even against the Democrats, we need to spread the word far and wide that the ADL is the chief architect of hate crimes legislation of other types as well, designed to tear down Christian values and the Christian our Republican system of government and all of this. And you see, ADL is 100% Jewish. It's a Jewish organization. It's an adjunct of B'nai B'rith International, an international organization with presences in 56 major nations of the world. It's orchestrating hate crimes bureaucracies among those nations worldwide. And what we need to do is to publicly embarrass ADL and hold up the spotlight to it as a liability to the Jewish community worldwide. Now, there are many, many Jews who hate the ADL as much as I do, who do not endorse it. And what we need to do is to put this spotlight of public shame and scrutiny on the ADL so that the Jewish community in America will become so embarrassed by ADL that they will force it to pull back. They'll put pressure on the Jewish media of Hollywood, the big three networks, the AIPAC, all of that. In other words, as the temperature of criticism against ADL, AIPAC, Zionism and Israeli abuses in Gaza and the West Bank and so on, as the level of anger is directed against these forces which are destabilizing America and destabilizing the Mideast, I believe we can hold back. We can basically send a harpoon into the very eye of this octopus with so many tentacles which are strangling civilization.
All right. You've said that many times before, and certainly that's a goal that many people have as well. As far as Jim, just to you, Jim, personally, I hear you. I understand what you're saying, and, you know, I always remember the warning of admonition to me many years ago with various problems, and that was to, you know, hope for the best and prepare for the worst, you know. And when it comes to the strategy of defending oneself, and that's what it really comes down to, not waging war or offensive warfare, but simply defensive warfare, I think we put our priorities in order. First, we have to seek the face of God and Him and do what's right. But when the push comes to shove and they come to take our Bibles, they come to tell us that we can't talk anymore, we can't preach, there's no freedom, then I think we'll all know which box to use at that point. I think that will be pretty evident, Ted, and I think you agree with me, as with the Lexington and Concord, when they came for the guns and they came to take away that which they had to defend themselves, then they had no choice. The colonists had no choice.
Absolutely.
Yeah, at that point. Okay, let's go move along now to Eddie in Ohio. Hello, Eddie.
Hi, Rick.
Hi. Greetings. Salutations. What's on your mind?
Rick, respectfully, I most disagree with you and with your guest, Dr.
That's
Tyson.
All right. That's why we're here, to agree to disagree. Go ahead. Let's hear it.
Well, this is not my words. It's the words of somebody named Jefferson. I believe he said that tree of liberty must be refreshed with the blood of patriots.
Uh-huh.
Rick, you can make phone calls. You can hold up a sign. You can buy a tea bag. But ultimately, all that you have done is entertain the exact same people that you are trying to bring down. Now, here in the hood, in the crappiest city in America, I can tell you what I've learned from having lived here a long, long time, okay? The only thing that is going to change the behavior of these people is violence, and lots and lots and lots of it. When it comes right down to it, Rick, the only thing that changes the behavior of people is pain. And I agree with everything that Rita said. That's all I had, Rick. Thank you for taking my call.
Well, okay, but don't just hit and run now, Eddie. Now, let me ask you. You agree with what she said, but what are you doing?
Rick, I'm out here telling everybody that I know what's up, okay?
Yeah.
And if the Jews send a hit squad down here to the ghetto, all they got to do is tell me where to stand, because I would rather live one day as a free man, okay, than to live under the yoke of these yokels. And we've done enough talking. We've sent enough phone calls. We have bought enough tea bags.
Uh-huh.
That is, it's not going to do anything. Not a thing. Otherwise, you know, it would have been done already. They'll just send a hit squad over to your house and bump you off. And then tell everybody that you were a child mutilator and a cattle rapist. And it'll be okay, because you were this evil ogre, okay, that you needed to be bumped off anyways, and the world's better off without you. Please give me a break, Rick. I'm sorry. I don't mean to get excited. You know,
that's
I respect
all right.
you, and
that's
I love
good.
Your show.
It shows that you still have some life in you, but let me ask you this now, and now you don't have to tell us on the air, but would it be safe to presume that you are in a position to carry out what you say? I mean, that you have weapons, that you are armed to defend yourself or to do what, in a flash of a moment what you say needs to be done?
Rick,
you don't
Japanese...
have to answer that.
No, I'm going to tell you. I want the world to know, okay? Whoever's listening to this, especially them Jews, all right?
Yeah.
Miyamoto Musashi. all right, said it very clearly. He says a man that's not afraid to die cannot be defeated, all right?
Yes.
So if that's the way I got to go out, then that's the way I'm going to go out. But I'm going to go down fighting.
You want to die on your feet and not live on your knees. I understand that, Eddie.
That's what I'm saying, Rick.
Okay. All right. Fair enough, brother. Thank you for the call.
Thank you for taking my call.
All right. Well, you see, you're right, Ted, that as you said, you're hearing a lot more of this talk. And
yes.
And it is apparent that, as I had said years ago, that the forces of anti-Christianity would create the very conditions that would lead to expected opposition to them militarily, and then they could crush it. That's what they hope to do.
That's right. And it lends actually a certain credence to Napolitano's description of a right wing here that is has a short fuse and is about ready to go off. I would like to say, Rick, that if we consider a kind of a study of the history of insurrections and rebellions, especially over the last 2,000 years, we will find there have been many peasant rebellions, many uprisings of the people, and the vast majority of them have been utterly crushed by the governments. If you think that somehow an armed rebellion is some kind of elixir for freedom and peace and a new social order, you'll have to appreciate that the American Revolution was largely carried out by very sober and scholarly intellectual people that really knew what they were doing. And the power of the British Empire clear across the Atlantic Ocean at arm's length was relatively an easy mark compared to what we will be facing if we get something to get something started against the massive
unless we had superior power, and we don't
that's right.
The thing is, they have the bombers, and the way they're bombing other countries illegally, occupying other nations, is certainly a test run for what they can do to us here in America.
That's
and
right.
You know, I mean, I'm just speaking out of personal conviction, and I'm not trying to discourage anyone from standing up for freedom, not at all. I'm just saying that I know how evil this enemy is and how despotic they are, and they have calculated their moves every step of the way, these Zionists. They have moved to do their implementing of this for over 100 years. They knew this day would come when the economy. See, here's the key here. We don't have to wait that long, I don't believe, because I believe they've already planned the collapse of the economy, and it very well could be by the end of this year, if not next year. And if that happens, then they already know they're going to implement that martial law once the people find out that they don't have any money to buy anything with, and they don't have anything to buy with even if they had the money. So that's what they have planned, I believe, based on what we've shown. So if that's the case, then you see it alters the equation even more. They're in the driver's seat. The ADL knows what it's doing. Their father is Satan, and Satan is very shrewd and very, very cunning. But our father is a different one, and, of course, he is totally in control.
Well, the truth of the matter is that an abortive revolution, abortive acts of terrorism or violence, could actually work extremely powerfully for the government, for the liberal ADL, Jewish International establishment, to clamp down and actually make possible world or at least national government and control such as we have never imagined to this point. So the idea that it's going to be some kind of a magical fix if we just start shedding a little blood, this is extremely unrealistic to say.
Well, I don't think people are prepared anyway. To be perfectly honest with you, they're living in delusion. I don't see really the people who have the arms and buying the kinds of arms it's going to take doing any training whatsoever or getting prepared to do that, because they don't know what martial law is. They don't live under martial law that's been imposed in these other countries by the U.S. They weren't in Germany at the time of the bombing of Dresden. They don't know how these evil people have decided to totally emasculate populations.
Well,
and they've done
it
without even batting an eyelash, Ted, you see?
Yeah, absolutely. I think if something got started at the first sight of blood, 99% of these big talkers would head for the hills.
Well, I'm afraid, you know, I hate to say it, and please, I'm not condemning anyone, and I'm not mentioning anybody. I'm not nobody who's called here, but I'm thinking people I know, people I know where I live, and they're big talkers, believe me. And they're going to do this, and they're going to do that, and I believe that that may very well be the case, that when push comes to shove, they'll be the first ones running in the opposite direction. These are people that I know personally, you see. I hope not, and I pray not, but I think that this is what to expect. All right, let's take another call. Very interesting program, as usual. When you come on, Ted, you steer up a hornet's nest. Let's talk to Doug in Texas. Here's an old-timer. Hello there, Doug.
Hi, Rick.
I don't mean that in a nefarious way, by the way, Doug.
Well,
you're an old-timer, new-timer, young man. Go ahead, Doug.
Nefarious or dastardly or whatever. Have you joined the other side, Rick, or what?
You think so?
You know, there's people like me that just... I don't live in Bastrop, Texas. I live 8 miles from there, and I've got my little place, and I got probably more weapons than Bastrop County Sheriff's Department owns, and know how to use them. I can practice on my own property. I can go out there and fire off my 30-06, 45, whatever.
Right.
And these, you know, you're talking about the little Antichrist Jewish supremacists that are taking over this country.
Yes.
I think people are getting sort of sick of them. Don't you get that feeling?
Well, that's what we've been saying. Yes, okay, we do.
Well,
what's the best way of opposing them? I think that's the only question that is tough for some.
I think the best way of opposing them is just withdraw from their system. I haven't recognized the Internal Revenue Service since 1969. I filed one time only. My property is not on the tax rolls as having a house here because I didn't get a permit. And I just kind of like, you know, fly avoiding a spider.
I hate
spider
to tell you
web.
This, Doug. You sound like a domestic terrorist to me.
Well.
Are you listening, Ted?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
You sound like a terrorist. Davy Crockett, Daniel Boone. This is getting terrifying.
Well, find me, Rick. Find me. You know, they can't even find me. I have friends that are computer nerds that try to look me up on Google Earth and this and that and the other. And you can't even find my house.
I know. I've tried to get a hold of you for a year and a half, Doug.
Okay.
You're right.
Okay. Well, that's the way you do it, Rick.
There you go. You had to find me again. Oh, my goodness. Well, anyway, you know, I know what you're saying, and withdrawing from the system as much as people can is a great idea. Not being dependent on the system, on anything that is, you know, utilities,
right.
People that have become exclusivists. You see what the government did at Ruby Ridge, though.
Right.
You see what the government did there. And, Ted, I know you're familiar with what they did to that wonderful family.
And you know, Rick, I've met Randy. And I spent a lot of time talking to him and everything.
Yeah.
And he is just he's a Doug Light is what he is. He's like me. He believes what I believe in this and that and other. But if they had killed my son and my wife and everything, Lana Rushi somehow or another wouldn't exist on this planet today. I mean, that's the difference between Randy Weaver and yours truly.
Mm-hmm. Well, more power to you, Doug.
I don't want to scare anybody, Rick.
No?
Sure.
No, I love you. I love you. I think you're doing a great job, and you're a great man. You're a true American. And all we can do is continue what we're doing here until the time comes when we have to make our own moves, but, you know, the government itself, the forces that control it, are really the enemy of the people, of the country. We're not the enemy of the country or the people. We are the people, and that's what we need to make people understand. So We'll continue on, Brother Doug, and you take care now. Thanks for your call. Ted, can you follow up with me and just wrap things up tonight? Okay, we'll be right back with Ted Buck. Well, here we are. I've saved the last 5 minutes or so for us to conclude, to wrap things up, Ted. And you must be pretty well amazed and exhausted by now, hearing what people think who've called the program out of countless hundreds of thousands of people who might be listening. What are your final thoughts, Ted, and what are you advocating that we do legislatively? I know that's your big bailiwick, obviously, but go ahead.
Well, I believe that we have to remember that we have to work toward attainable goals. It's one thing to say, this is what we should do. We should throw the bums out. We should not elect any more people, all of that. The fact is that there have been priceless men in among the Republicans in the House, like Louis Gohmert and Steve King and Bob Goodlatte and Steve Forbes and Mike Pence and others who have really fought hard against this hate bill. And I absolutely applaud them. I do not like the way they unconditionally support Israel, but that's another issue. They are priceless men, and it would be a tragedy to remove them from Congress. We have to stay within the established bounds that have been so wisely provided us legislatively by our founding fathers. I also think that we have to remember that internationally, nationally and internationally, we are very largely in this predicament because of a historic attitude of Christian evangelicals over the last century that we must unconditionally support Jews, we must give them immunity from criticism both domestically and in the Middle East and so on. And the fact of the matter is that the present collapse of the Republican and Christian conservative Reagan Revolution is a direct result of rushing into the Middle East, especially after 9/11, to make Israel, basically, the real agenda was to make the Middle East safe for Israel.
Mm-hmm.
This persistent evangelical idea that the Jews must be protected, and Jews in high places, Jewish civil liberties groups, Zionists and so on, are beyond criticism, allows this Talmudic cancer that comes out of international organized Jewry to continue to work so destructively against not only our American society, but against the society of the world. So we need to continue to speak out against ADL, against AIPAC, against Israel and her injustices in the Middle East. But finally, we need to take action that is spirit-led. We need to unite our faith with action. I was on with Butch Paul last night, and a lady called up and told me that she has a reminder on her refrigerator to pray against Obama daily. And she says that dozens of times every day she goes by her refrigerator, she prays against the Democrats, she prays against Obama. Well, what I wanted to tell her, I didn't have time, but what I wanted to tell her was she needs to take that faith and unite it with action. She needs to put all the phone numbers there on her refrigerator of the members, the Republican members of the House Education and Labor Committee, and she needs to alternate. She needs to pray against Obama, and then the next time she passes her refrigerator, pick up her cell phone and invest 1 minute of her time to call in and encourage these Republicans in the House to vote, especially against ADL's new public hate law, which is entitled the Student Non-Discrimination Act. If she could alternate during the day between praying against the government and actually taking action by faith, we could have some real action, in my opinion, in stopping this legislation. So I'm just saying, people, come to truthtellers.org, read my good latest powerful article against this latest ADL threat. Let's take action this week and stop it dead in its tracks like we've done several other of these bills this year.
Okay, then, Ted, it's been a very interesting and informative 2 hours. Thank you for being on again.
Thank you, Rex.
Okay, we'll talk again. Take care.